Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 176. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And tonight, on this episode, we continue our Halloween series review with Halloween 3 and 4. But first up, a pair of movies that are new in theaters, starting with The Predator, which is, what is it, the fifth Predator film, if you don't count the
if you don't count the AVP movies, the it's the fourth.
Yeah,
if you do count them, it's the sixth.
Either way, the latest Predator film, which is I think written and directed by Shane Black this time. Yep.
Yeah.
Who he had like a small role in the original film, and what I mean. First of all, what's the setup here? What's the story? I barely remember. It was so bonkers. Oh,
God, like some a spaceship crashes on Earth. This Ranger team looks like they're hunting like a cartel dude or something. And when it crashes, like everything goes haywire. The Predator that was on board, he kills like a bunch of the Rangers, and then there's a government cover-up from that point on in dealing with the Predator. And so it's a matter of, like, this Ranger that survived and his new team of, like, weird misfits. and also the Predator is the main Predator. What they call it? Like, the Super Predator or something like that?
I don't even remember. That's what I would call it, but yeah.
Yeah, like, evidently, he is here, one, to kill the other Predator, and two, to capture this little kid who has, he's either autistic or he's on the spectrum of some kind, because that is evidently the next step in evolution.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So... this thing was not what I expected. I don't know about you, Chris, but like, it was funny. Like, 2 days after I saw it, you know, my girlfriend, she doesn't really like talk about movies after we see them that much unless I prompt her. But out of nowhere, she's like, "We need to talk about The Predator." And I was like, "Why?" or whatever. She's like, "I thought those were horror movies." And I was like, "Yeah, it's pretty fucking out there." Like, this thing is a lot of jokes, and I thought it was pretty funny. Like, I know it got really bad reviews, but I liked this, like, group of weirdos. It's not good, but I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I don't know. How about you?
It was okay. I think some of the humor landed for me. Some of it was not so great, cringeworthy.
But, I mean, it's like, if you like Shane Black humor, it's kind of, yeah, it is dated, I guess, somewhat. Like, you know, they're doing your mom jokes, and
yeah,
but I thought they were funny. Like, I was laughing. Like, not only did I find it funny, but my whole audience of idiots were all giggling. Like, the audience I saw this with was like delighted by this movie. Like, everyone was fucking laughing. Although, I mean, it did get quieter as it went on. I'll say that.
Yeah, well, I think it starts out pretty strong. It's pretty goofy to start, but it also starts out pretty strong. But I think it gets weaker as it moves on, especially when it tries to become serious in like the last act of the film, and loses all like kind of its humor.
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah, kind of a mess at the end. I heard there was like a lot of like reshoots, and this changed a lot from what Shane Black wanted it to be.
Yeah, the original ending that I heard that he wrote, which he couldn't use because Arnold Schwarzenegger decided he didn't want to come back, would have been like way cooler, I think.
What, all right, is the ending that we have, except it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, is like that comes out of the thing?
No, no.
Okay, because that would be awesome.
That would have been awesome too, though. I like that. Wow. I like that better than what we would have. His original was like, we wouldn't have got that weird kind of after credits, but not after credits scene that kind of happens where they open up the pod or whatever. It would have been like a chopper coming down after they kill the super predator and Dutch being on board and telling them to get on. And like, then like the little kid is like
a chopper.
Yeah, basically like that to me would have been like a cool ending to it. It's like, we have more work to do or something. And like Arnold is there to pick them up and they're going to go fight more predators or whatever.
It's completely random and like without totally spoiling the ending, but I thought we were going to get a xenomorph at the end there for whatever reason. It looked like something that would be a xenomorph would come out of.
I mean, that's the only thing that historically has been able to put up a challenge to the predator. So,
I mean, I would have enjoyed that too. I thought that what the actual ending is, like the reveal, is stupid. Yeah. I think the movie's stupid. Don't get me wrong. Like, this is a movie where there is a scene where in the back of this truck, the predator is killing a bunch of dudes. And then the driver of the truck, like, calls back through, like, the little window to the back of the truck. He's like, is everything all right back there? And the predator sticks someone's severed arm through, like, the thing with a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Like, it's so dumb. It's like, and I don't know, like, I went in with pretty low expectations, expecting this to just be terrible. And, like, it kind of is, but it's, like, spectacularly terrible.
Yeah, that's kind of where I came out. Like, it's totally watchable in its badness. I don't think it realizes it's bad, but whatever. It's fine. It's fun enough that it'll get you through, like, the hour and 45 minutes or whatever it is.
It's just one of the few things I would say is it's a little too long. I think it was almost 2 hours. I don't know. Yeah, about hour 45. Well, it felt fucking long.
Yeah, that last act is
a little muddled there. Yeah.
Well, the last act, like a lot of it takes place during daylight, which, like, I don't know. The whole film takes place at night for the most part, and then it's like we're gonna have the final fight in the daytime.
Yeah, and it's just confusing. One, the plot's not very good, and then it's just like confusingly edited, and like things don't make sense if you think about them.
Yeah,
but like for me, I really had a fun time. Like, I really did find the humor. Like, I like Thomas Jane. I like Boyd Holbrook, Keegan Michael Key. Like, Olivia Munn, she's really good in it. Like, that group that they had.
That's, like, the one that, like, I was like, she doesn't fit here, and she's...
You didn't like her in it?
She's kind of bad, yeah.
She convinced me, dude. Like, she came off as, like, believable to me, which I did not expect.
I don't know. I came out of that going, it's a step above Denise Richards being a nuclear physicist in Bond. Like, I was like, I didn't buy her as this, like,
She it would be like a super pretty biologist, whatever. But
I don't know. Like, I don't think like it has anything to do with her looks. Like, I just did not find by it.
Yeah,
she could do it, and like that she knew what the fuck she was talking about, or that she brought anything.
The chemistry between them all was that.
Or I didn't really think she like added anything. Like, I mean, I guess she was there. Like, they could bounce jokes off of her, and she was more like the straight person. Because like they did poke a lot of fun where she would shut them down, which was funny in some parts.
I mean, I know there's like things that are on PC. Like, this is, like I said, some of the humor in this is old school, but like the eat your pussy scene, I thought it was fucking hilarious.
It was pretty funny.
Some riffing on it, like those are things, and it's like, none of this is stuff that you want or expect out of a Predator film, like, but those are the things that, like, I was like, I'm having, like, I did not expect to be like sitting in the theater laughing at this thing.
Right. And I do look at it and go, you know, the last Predator movie we got, Predators.
Yeah.
It tried to go super serious and like that didn't work either. So, I mean, I can't blame Shane Black for trying to make like this goofy ass action film. It's better than Predators.
I like that they used like the theme song, the score is like sounds just like the first one to me. I don't remember Predators that well. I remember I actually kind of like, I think I'm one of those weird people that like, I actually like all the Predator, like the main Predator movies. I even like two. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I don't know.
I think maybe one day we're going to have to sit down and watch all these. Because Predator 2 like was not what I wanted at the time, but it works as like a goofy ass action movie as well.
Yeah, and it's just like a good idea for like a change of pace. Like, oh, now he's in the big city. Yeah, it's not as good as fucking part one, but I find it entertaining enough to watch. Like, and that's the thing with this. Like, I think this movie has high rewatchability because it's just so dumb. And you just feel like you could turn it on at any point and just watch it for a minute, like just the stupid entertainment of it.
Right.
It's like a perfect cable movie or hangover movie where it's just like on in the background.
Yeah.
I almost want to get it when it comes out. That's how much I like it.
It's one of those movies that you can watch like for the first, like, I don't know, maybe hour. And they're like, yeah, I'm good. I've seen what I need from this. And also this is the new part. So
that's true as well. But like there are moments like,
yeah,
like the kid wearing the Predator mask,
and then I thought that was using great.
It. Yeah, I laughed out loud.
Well, I'm like sitting there, how is he even holding that shit up on? Like, I know he taped it to himself. Like, thing looks fucking heavy, and it's as big as he is.
Yeah, and just the way, like, I was like, no, they're not gonna do that, and then they did it. I was like, all right, cool. This movie's just not giving a fuck. Again, I'm not saying it's like good. I'm saying I was thoroughly entertained by it. It's probably like, it would be like a 3.5 for me. So I'm going to go, I will land on a 3. How about you?
I'm at a 3 too. It's as you know, it's not good, but it's entirely watchable.
Yeah. And me, I also acknowledge, it's like, I also like the Sterling Brown as a bad guy. But anyways, yeah. I will also acknowledge it's not very good, but I pretty much loved it. So I'm a slightly higher 3 than you there, but
we're pretty much on the same page there, though.
Yeah. But moving along to the main attraction here. Chris, Halloween 3.
Yeah.
Season of the Witch. Came out in October 22nd, 1982. Mm-hmm. It was written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace, although he would say that a bunch of people worked on the story.
Yeah, evidently. There were like two other people that worked on it, including Carpenter himself, prior to Wallace like kind of doing a final rewrite on everything, but he's the only one credited.
Yeah. Still like kind of the same crew from 1 and 2 in a lot of ways, you know. Yeah. A lot of like, Carpenter doing the music, although I think Alan Howarth probably did more of it. Yeah. Dean Cundey still doing the cinematography. So it's like, there's still that crew, you know? And it had a budget of 2.5 million. Did box office of $14 million, so it made money, kind of.
It did. It's still viewed as a major disappointment, I guess, for the
series. Yeah, like even if you could look at that box office and say, oh, it did okay, like there was, I guess, big backlash to this movie.
Yeah,
because this movie does not continue the story of Michael Myers, started in part 1 and 2. This movie is its own thing, and their idea was to do a new like Halloween related story every couple years under this franchise. And they thought they could do that. They thought they had told Michael Myers' story. They blew him up in the hospital. He's dead, you know. And this was going to be what they're going to do. And this is what we get. The result of that is this really weird kind of paranoid thriller about an evil toy company that's going to end the world with its evil Halloween masks.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of talked a lot about this last week, and I'm sure plenty of weeks on the show. So once again, I'm going to turn it over to you, Chris. Like, tell me a little bit of what the fuck this thing is and what you think.
I think if this is not called Halloween 3, that it maybe does better back in 1982. I don't think it's bad. Like, I think the first couple times I saw it, I was like, this is a bad movie. What the fuck is this? I think I had the exact same reaction that a lot of people had in watching this, is like, at that point, there is an expectation that Michael Myers is the star of the series, right? They fucked up by making Halloween 2 about Michael Myers, like continuing the story there. Because I think if this had been Halloween 2, we may be having a completely different conversation about it, because this would have been an anthology series, which could still be running today.
I could see if they came out with Halloween 2 and it was this, I could still see people being like, where'd Michael Myers go? What the fuck?
You're right. I don't think you could call it Halloween 2, right? Like, maybe just Halloween Season of the Witch or whatever. But by putting a number on it, yeah, you're directing it to be, you know, a sequel, a continuation of what previously happened, unless you can have a super smart marketing campaign that distinguishes it, that it is not that. I mean, yeah. This even uses, it does a twist on the tagline for Halloween, which, like, Halloween is the night he comes home. And the tagline for this is the night no one comes home. Like,
yeah, but and so, you just take that as, all right, well, shit's getting escalating.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he's gonna fucking kill everybody this time.
Exactly.
But it's a weird setup. Like, like really strange. Tom Atkins is. He's fine. I think he is perfectly fine as the main character here. The fact that he is a doctor is fucking really weird.
he basically plays the role of a detective in this. Like, yeah, I don't know why they didn't just make him a cop.
Yeah, or like a PI or something, right? Like,
why did it have to be the guy, the doctor at the hospital? Like, couldn't she have gone to like a private detective,
right,
or whatever? Like, yeah, exactly. Something like that. Something that makes fucking sense.
Yeah, it makes zero sense that, like, the doctor would just be like, I'm going to run off with this hot chick. I mean, maybe it does. Like, he's obviously not a very, like, responsible parent, right?
Like, this is, like, one of my favorite main characters ever, because he's just totally about chasing the pussy. Like, it's like an unsaid thing.
Oh, yeah, he flirts with the medical examiner, and it's implied that they have some sort of relationship. I think he smacks the head nurse on the ass.
And he's a drunk. Like,
he's drunk. Like, it's so weird.
Like, you know, and they decide, like, that's our hero. And I like, love that. It's fucking Tom Atkins. Yeah, so, like, what? Her, like, what's the main character? Like, the girl?
Ellie, played by Stacey Nelkin. But, yeah.
It's, like, her dad or something gets killed at the beginning.
Yeah, by these creepy, like, well, I don't, like, at the time, you don't know what people. The fuck they are. Yeah, like, they're just these weird, like, creepy.
Crazy assassins.
That are chasing him down, and it's really strange. And that then, like, obviously, we find out afterwards what they are, but yeah, like these.
I mean, we
these
can spoil it. This is old.
Yeah, they're fucking robots or like androids of some sort.
Like basically, like they're like androids, but they're also like you're just supposed to believe like they're super advanced, just like toys, kind of.
Yeah, like that. Because like
they have a bunch of gears in them, like yeah. Like animatronic or something. And it's, I don't know, dude.
Yeah, it's really strange, like because like they spurt out like this goop or something when they die, almost like a like ash in Alien, except that's not milk; it's like this like mucusy looking shit.
There's a lot like in this like doesn't make sense too, like
Stonehenge shit.
Yeah. So like, yeah, beyond just like oh, like that's weird. Like, yeah. They're using some sort of magic that they're putting in the microchips in these masks that are going to somehow trigger the deaths all around the world.
They kids scrape, watch these
commercials.
That they scrape off of a
Stonehenge.
Like a piece of Stonehenge that they somehow stole from England and got all the way to California. Nobody fucking knows.
Like, makes. That makes no sense. You know what I mean? Like, that's just bonkers. But, I and that's part of why I think it had a reputation too, like, starting off, that's a bad movie, you know? Like, there's things like that's like a pretty, like, shoddy plot. Like, what? But, like, it's also just so bonkers and insane. I think that's why, like, this film kind of endures and people kind of love it. At least I do. I personally, spoilers, I love this movie a lot. It's so dumb. It is. That's
it's why very I dumb. I don't love it, but I no longer hate it. but it is, it's such a weird thing. And I can see where today people have definitely turned onto it and have become fans of it. Like, it is kind of this cult classic now that has found an audience years after it was declared a bomb, but and basically destroyed Deborah Hill and John Carpenter's their relationship with the series, because they sold their rights immediately after it went bad. So yeah.
I was thinking of, like, some of the other things that don't make sense. Besides, like, you know, all right, obviously, we're scraping bits of Stonehenge and putting them in the microchips. That doesn't make sense. But then just, like, the rules of how these things are going to kill the world don't make sense. Like, how, like, all right, in one scene, a lady is fucking with this microchip and it shoots a fucking giant laser at her face.
Yeah, so and that, I have no idea what the fuck happened.
Her face. Yeah, like bugs crawl on her face, her eyes turn red, and, like, her fucking whole face is split open like a sausage. But then there's a later scene where we get to see how the commercial interacts with the mask when this family goes in this test room or whatever.
Yeah.
And it basically, like, makes the mask melt, and then somehow snakes come out of the kid's head. Like,
that's again, I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. My head on, like, where do the bugs and snakes come from?
Are they coming out of the mask? Are they coming out of the microchip? Are they coming from this kid's soul? Like, what is right. going on here? Like,
it's like, all right, well, the kid's kind of a dick, so I could understand some, like, you know, bugs and snakes coming at him. But what if it's, like, a nice kid? Like, does cotton candy pop out? Like, what the fuck? Like,
it's all just movie, like, magic nonsense, you know, that has, like, the fact that they even go so far to even explain it, like, somehow Stonehenge is involved, like, I'm surprised they even did that. But that just makes it even more crazy.
Yeah, because I think if they had not brought that piece in and just been like, hey, we have this, like, super huge Arctic factor or whatever, and it has magic properties. Like, you didn't have to be like, we stole part of Stonehenge, and it made the news. Like, so it's not like the whole thing is crazy.
But there's things, like, I like the vibe of it. I like the idea, like, it's trying to be, like, it's like an open homage to stuff like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I like that.
Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of this creepy company town or whatever. Like, that shit, I think it works really well. Like, the weird loudspeakers announcing, it's curfew, it's time to go to bed.
Six o'clock.
Yeah, 6 o'clock. And I mean, my girlfriend was like, what the fuck, 6 o'clock? Like, that stuff I really dig. And, like, I like the insanity. I like as it goes on, it gets more and more just kind of crazy. Like, oh, this guy also used to make toys, like, you know, and but he's also made robots here. And then the girl that the dude is with gets turned into a robot, or was she a robot? Like,
yeah,
it's insane, you know.
It's like, I think that she's turned into one, because she doesn't talk.
She has to be turned into one.
Yeah, because once Dr. Chalice finds her, and rescues her, she does not have another line of dialogue the rest of the movie. But she's quite talkative up until then.
Yeah, yeah. Let me take a look at my notes that I took while I was watching this. Oh, yeah, broken record. But once again, I love the opening credits again here. They're different this time. Like, in the first two, it was like the black, you know, just black, and you coming out of a pumpkin. Here, it's like... it's like old computer graphics making a pumpkin.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, digitized scan lines. Slowly forming what will become like a pixel pumpkin.
And I love the score in this movie. Like, it's completely different from the other ones. Still done by, you know, Carpenter and Howarth. I think this is one of my favorite scores by him. It reminds me a lot of Christine.
Yeah, it's really good. There's a nice synth feel to it, but it adds a creepy atmosphere to things. And I think it's the best thing about the movie, actually. So
the score.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that'd probably be one of my favorite things about it, too. But I just love all of its nonsense. Like, I already mentioned this note, kind of. But I love how it goes out of its way to establish what a shitbag this main character is.
Yeah. The first time we see him is he's showing up to his kids, and he's like,
and the wife is like, you're drinking and doctoring. And then he's like, got these cheap masks that he didn't want.
And then he's like, I gotta go. Just picks up and leaves.
I think even though the kills don't make sense, like, there's some really awesome, gruesome, violent ones. Or just like creative ones, like the ripping of the guy's nose or whatever, like right at the beginning.
Yeah, I like the homeless guy kill, where they kind of twist his head off.
Is that your favorite one, or are you putting that in as your?
I don't know if it's my favorite one, but okay. It's up there. I mean, the laser beam kill with the lady is pretty good too.
I think that one's my favorite because the aftermath is so gruesome. Like, her face is just...
Oh, yeah, it's fucked up. Like, you don't really see the guy again after they rip his head off. But.
Skipping through some of these. Oh, yeah. Why did the girl have lingerie with her? Like, all of a sudden, right? She's, like, changing this, like, nighty. It's like, they didn't even bring luggage with them because they weren't going to spend the night. So I'm just like...
Yeah, like, that's a plot point, right?
They say
like,
that, yeah.
Like, he,
you caught that too? Like, you had that fucking note too? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, she like, he runs off to the main office to kind of check the registrar, and she's trying to delay this guy as long as she can. So it's like, do you guys have luggage? And like, she gets out basically the fucking picnic basket. That's the only thing that she has. And then, but somehow she has like this like elaborate like nighty.
And that whole, like, the whole scene is so fucking awkward and gross.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I could get a second room. Like, the whole thing. Yeah. Whole thing. Like, from the beginning, he's like, he makes sure to grab a sixer of beer. He's calling his wife as he's running to leave fucking town to go solve the case.
Then he's like, I'm going to be a gentleman and, like, offer to get another room,
but you know, like, I really don't want to.
That'll be awkward, like, don't you think? Like, raise some suspicions. Like, who the fuck gives a shit? Like, you guys had a fight or something. You wanted a different room,
right? No one cares.
But she's like, I need some dick.
Oh, man. I don't know, though. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, like, Stockholm Syndrome from all these years, but, like, even that is one of the things that, like, I love about this movie. It's just how corny that whole, like, that shit is. Like, I don't know. I really enjoy it. The rest of my notes we kind of already touched on in our discussion, but this is one of my favorites. I watched this one the most out of all the Halloweens lately, just because it's such an oddball fucking movie.
It definitely is that.
So I'm giving it a 4 stars. It's one of my favorites. How did this play out for you this time, Chris?
I think it's a 3. I enjoyed watching it for like the ridiculousness of it. I think it is the oddball, right? Because every other film in the franchise deals with Myers in some way, and this is just some weird fucking thing that is out there.
Yeah.
It's a fucking crazy ass jingle set to like London Bridge is falling down.
And it must feel good for Tommy Lee Wallace to like finally, like all these years later, there's a fan base for this movie. It's not just me. I'm not like insane. Like there's other
people. No, it
must feel good to get that recognition, even if it is like 30 years late.
Yeah. Hey, good for him.
I thought he did a good job directing it and everything. Like, I wish he went on to a bigger career. He did direct the 1990 version of it. But that was okay. Probably one of his last notable things.
He has a movie in pre-production. He hasn't directed anything in 16 years.
Yeah.
But he has a movie in pre-production called Helliversity.
Just from watching all like the behind the scenes shit as we go through this series, because I have like, you know, the Scream Factory Blu-rays, they have like like hour long things on them. He seems like a really fucking cool, like nice guy, like just like a normal guy.
Yeah.
At least he's getting some recognition now. Tommy Lee Wallace, you're awesome. But moving along, the powers that be did not think Tommy Lee Wallace was awesome and did not like the direction that Halloween 3 went. They wanted to go back to Michael Myers and what made this franchise work. I think that was mostly Mustafa Akkad, but I think pretty much everyone involved at this point thought that was the logical thing to do, was go back to Michael Myers.
Yeah.
So it took a while, though, because this one came out Halloween 4 came out October 21st, 1988.
Yeah. So 5-6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Directed by Dwight H. Little, who I think he did said screenplay by Alan B. McElroy. But I want to say that Dwight was involved in rewrites. It says there's a whole bunch of people credited on story here, too. Anyways, Dwight H. Little was the director. And it had a budget of $5 million. Did a box office of 17.7. So I guess it did better than 3 by a little bit, but it also cost them a little bit more to make. Yeah. So I think a lot of this was more in their head than anything. But they went back to the roots here. And I remember this movie. I remember this being one of the few movies when I was a kid that actually scared me. I don't know if I've told this story before. I don't know. Do you remember me telling a story?
I don't think so.
It was just basically, I was just getting old enough to where my parents would leave me home alone sometimes, like they would go out to eat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I rented this from the video store and I was watching it for the first time. And so I was like sitting there, it was like night, I was watching it by myself. And I think it was like storming or something outside. And I just got creeped out and I thought I heard a sound in the house. And so, like, this movie was just working on me. I was just kind of, like, freaked out in general. I just remember, like, really being scared by it. I also remember when I was a kid, like, really liking this one. And I think my opinion on it has kind of wavered over the years a little bit. But I found this one pretty enjoyable revisiting it. How about you?
I did too. There are things.
There's problems. There's flaws.
Yeah, I liked it. I still found it to be quite fun. It's kind of it hits a lot of the same notes that the other two with Michael does, and
a lot of callbacks actually in it.
It's mostly fun. Like it's a pretty good. And it actually makes, you know, for the first time, really, like, I mean, we see Michael in the other movies killing people, but in this, he's, like, actually brutal. Like, there's, like, that...
The thumb.
Yeah, the thumb going in, and the throat, and, like, there's a bunch of, like, it's a more grisly Michael than we've seen before.
It also has, it feels like distinctly 1988. Like, it feels like a late 80s horror movie. Like, it's a lot slicker than one or two, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, it just feels cheaper in a way because of that. Like, it doesn't, it's weird, you know what I mean? Like, this has a way bigger budget than part one, but part one looks and feels a lot classier than this. It's,
yeah, I mean, there.
You know what I mean? It's like a weird thing.
There's a thing about, like, kind of the guerrilla filmmaking that Carpenter had to go through for one versus this, where, you know, they kind of had a budget and like 10 times the budget, or even more than that, than the original one. So,
but yeah, I mean, so the basic idea here is we pick up, it's 10 years after the first two happened, right?
Yes.
And they purposely, like, they don't talk a ton about, like, how are Michael Myers and Dr. Loomis still alive, because last we saw them, they're just, like, blown up in a hospital.
Yeah, like, the last we see Michael is, like, he's walking out of where he was just blown the fuck up, but he is on fire. Yeah. And he collapses.
And, like, it, you know, they play that out here. Michael Myers is in a coma still, like, recovering or whatever the fuck. Just a vegetable, basically.
Yep.
And Dr. Loomis has egg on the side of his face, basically. Like, he's just got this bad-looking, really cheap-looking scar. All
right, so, Michael, who was wearing a mask during his attack in 78, he is wrapped around like a fucking mummy.
Yeah.
His face is wrapped up, yet, yeah, Dr. Loomis has, like, this weird, like, egg-like growth on the right side of his face. And that's it. There's no other legitimate disfiguration.
Oh, he's got a cane now. He's got a bit of a limp.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, it's kind of like, you know, it's not like the film ignores that shit happens, but it also doesn't talk about it a lot. They said that they purposely did that because they knew that they didn't want people thinking about the fact that, like, there's no way that they survived it, you know?
Yeah.
But the story in this one now is, like I said, it's gone down this path where, you know, in part one, he's just killing people. And then in two, oh, she's his sister. And so now it has to be about he's, like, trying to kill off his family.
Which...
And
the more I think about this, the less it makes any fucking sense.
Yeah, like, it's like, well, one, why?
Right,
why does he have to do it?
Like, if he's this evil thing, and, like, why would he need to kill off his bloodline? Wouldn't
he would kill random people?
Like, right, that... like, and then, like, you could transfer the evilness or whatever through your bloodline. Like, why would you kill your bloodline? Why wouldn't you just kill strangers?
Yeah, it's just, it's them trying to, like, to do a story out of the series is what, like, basically, I would say the next three movies we get, it's like this series trying to continue some sort of story, but it doesn't know what or why or what.
But there was no story to latch onto, right? Like,
So you make it about the family, like, because that's what stories, like, most stories are about anyways.
I mean, like,
he's trying to kill his family.
Twist around, like, you do him, throw a mirror image at Friday the 13th, right? Like, that first one was, oh, like, Jason's come back from the dead, but it's really his mom. And then you finally pick up with Jason being the killer, and you know, he's avenging what happened to his mom and him. But that's about as far as, that's as deep as that ever really gets throughout all of those movies. This, they try and go deep.
it doesn't
kill his, necessarily work.
He's trying to, like, kill his bloodline here, because they couldn't get Jamie Lee Curtis back because she was a big movie star by this point, and this is a cheap little horror movie. So they explain that it's so vague, but I always remember that they explain it basically like that she had died in like a car crash or something weird like that.
Yep.
In between the movies. And now we pick up following her daughter, Jamie Lloyd, who's played by Danielle Harris. And you know, Michael Myers, he wakes up from his coma and he starts heading back to Haddonfield
after
he'll finish off his bloodline.
He wakes up specifically after hearing that he has more family. Like that.
Is because, that how it goes?
Yeah, because the guy that's moving, like he's the two nurses, the transport people. They're talking and explaining, like, oh well, yeah, like I don't know, his sister died in a car accident or something, but he still has like a niece still living back home in Haddonfield, and like that's when you see like his hand twitch or something. It's like, okay. All right, well, you woke him up. Good job there, buddy.
So it's like, that's what we're dealing with here. And that's what we're dealing with, actually, like I said, through the next three movies. I kind of call it the Thorn Trilogy because of the stupid cult thing that they come up with later. But, and if we're looking at 4, 5, and 6 as a trilogy, this is easily the fucking best one. Because this is just them trying to get back to, let's just do a fucking Michael Myers movie, but they're throwing that shit on top of it, the story, right?
Well, and it ends fucking perfectly. It has a fucking awesome ending.
It is a pretty cool ending.
That they fucking throw out in the next two movies.
Yeah. And I don't blame them for throwing out the end. Like, I didn't, like, I remember even at the time thinking, like, oh, that's a cool ending, but I'm not expecting them to, like, necessarily continue that. I remember thinking it was a possibility. But then I remember, like, trailers for Halloween 5 coming on TV, and you saw Michael Myers. I was like, fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Unless,
I mean,
unless the twist was she was dressing up as Michael Myers.
Which would have been hysterical.
Yeah.
Because she, like, even as a grown adult, she is not a big person.
Yeah. Somehow play that off. But, I don't know. This movie, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's short. It's, you know, 88 minutes. Like I said, a lot of callbacks. Like, when he comes back to life, first off, also, like we said before, a lot of like more gruesome kills. He does that fucking crazy thumb kill.
Yeah.
And then he goes to, you know, just like in part one, to a gas station to get his classic jumpsuit back and a car. You know, that's kind of a callback to part one. It's almost like they're like acknowledging that they like screwed up and they're going back to basics. Like he goes to the store to get the mask back and shit like that. Even that ending, the twisted ending, is a callback to the very beginning of part one. You know,
yep.
It's like ending with the scene that starts the whole series. So it's like easy to forget because of how like crazy and fucked up like the series gets after this one. But that's kind of what they were trying to accomplish here. I think they do a good job, actually. Like, one, first off, like one thing I want to make sure while I remember it, I think this is the best opening credits in the whole series. Like, this is one of my favorite opening credits ever, because it just establishes that, like, mood of, like, Halloween in the Midwest with, like, the decorations and the like, the rural farmland shots, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is really cool. I do... I don't know. I love some of the kills. I love, like, the whole part that takes place inside of the house where they're, like, they're holed up.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember, like, that being the part where I was getting creeped out when I was a kid watching it for the first time. So it's like all they're all like kind of holed up and they're like locked into this house, you know, trying to stay safe. They're all like, got weapons and everything, and he's in there with them. Like I remember like literally shitting my pants when he like he's the guy sitting in the chair.
Oh, that, with a gun. That's a great shot too. Like where
that's a great kill.
Yeah, where she like realizes that like and she's talking to the police officer and. She turns the light on and realizes that he's dead and whoever's in the chair is not who she thought. And he turns around and kills her.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually like looking at my notes here. There's a lot of things. I'm like, I love this. I love that. Like, I love the stupid scene in the truck with the preacher, with Dr. Loomis and the preacher. Where they, like an utterly pointless scene where they talked about, I think it's just another chance to talk about how, oh, pure evil or whatever, you know what I mean? But then they just like go into this random like Bible fucking song or whatever.
I also like, which is really funny because, you know, we're just talking about with the Predator, but there's a very similar scene on the truck towards the end where Michael like somehow pulls himself up and he starts dispatching people on the back of the pickup truck without anybody else noticing. He kills three people and like each time like the other person on the other people on the truck don't realize that anything's happening.
I love that whole like vigilante justice angle that's going through this one too, like where there's like this mob of people.
Yeah,
like these rednecks that are trying to kill him, and they're like all wearing red baseball caps, which I found really amazing, eerie. Yeah, like okay, it was fun to see Michael kill them. I like that there's like an appropriate response to like the threat that he poses. Like everyone kind of goes ape shit. Like the whole town's like, oh fuck,
he's back. Well, time to go.
Yeah, and like yeah, and like you know, at the end they like really. Fucking just, you know, shoot the fucking shit. Although, like, then he just falls into a hole, and we never see them follow up on that.
Yeah, they're like, he's dead. He's in hell now. How do you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean,
you've shot this guy six times, knocked him off of a fucking balcony of a house. That didn't kill him. Just fell in a hole. You blew him the fuck up. That didn't kill him. You really think that, like, just knocking him into a hole, that he's dead now?
I mean, you could assume that they, like, you know, did something, but as they explain it in part five, you know, their explanation is they did basically nothing. Like, oh, he fell in a hole and just walked away. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I generally like really like enjoy Halloween 4. Like to me, it's like the last of the good Halloween movies. Honestly, like I think there will be things I like about the ones after this, but this is kind of it. But I do, but I really enjoy this one. Like I really had a fun time going. Like I love the like when he's chasing them around on the roof and shit too. Before that,
which. I ended up, I've been like popping on some of the special features on these things. And on this one, I have like it's like a condensed version of a talk that was had at some convention. And Daniel Harris is explaining this, like that whole scene. They built like this roof and which, you know, for safety reasons, but it was still 16 feet off the ground. So it was still fucking dangerous for them to be up there. And the girl that plays Rachel, she actually cut herself a couple times.
She got cut like a nail or something, right?
Yeah. So, that whole scene is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's well done. I like the cast, actually. I think Danielle Harris does a good job. I think she's like actually a pretty decent kid actress in this.
Yeah.
What's his name? I think his name is Sasha Jensen. He is the guy that was kind of like a jock bully type, kind of bully type in Days Confused. Yeah, Sasha Jensen. He's Brady in this. I think he's a good actor. Like, I'm actually surprised that he didn't go on to have like a bigger career. Seemed like he kind of disappeared after those couple movies. But I think like I liked everyone. I think everyone did a good job in this. My favorite kill, Chris, is when he rips like the redneck's fucking head off.
Yeah,
through like the side of the truck. Like, he just grabs him and by the neck and just like, or by the jaw, just like rips him from the neck. Like, that was crazy. I don't know. What was
your, I think that's mine too. Like, it kind of showed the brutality that, like, you know, Michael becomes known for. Like, this is really where he really starts like being brutal with his kills. Like, and it's probably, you know, they had more of a budget and they knew what they could get away with now. Where in 78, you know, John Carpenter, obviously, like, there weren't a ton of these movies. And he's dealing with a limited budget. Now Halloween 4 comes out. There's been a ton of like Friday the 13th movies and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. So they know what they can get away with the, you know, the motion picture board, and they make him brutal. Like, he's a gruesome fucking killer going forward. So,
what do you rate this one?
I think I'm going to go with a 3. Like, I do. I think it's a good Halloween movie. And you might be right. It might be the last good one. It's entirely, it's fun to watch. It's enjoyable. I'm not going to go any higher than that. I don't think it's like on the same level as 2. But
I don't either.
It's a good fun slasher film.
This is why you need like half stars, because this is like a high 3 for me. Like, I rated it, I think, on Letterboxd 3.5. But if I have to choose, I think I would go with you on this, Chris. It's a 3. It's a really solid one, though. A good example too of like a late 80s slasher movie.
Yeah.
That actually, you know, one that has a little bit of a like a budget, like sort of a budget, you know, $5 million behind it, and like they're trying to do a story. And I generally like it. I don't like it goes fucked up places from here, and we'll get to that next week. So,
fucked up and really dumb, but I think it's fun as well. Like,
I mean, I could watch any of these movies, but like these two are going to be, I mean,
these are going to be the hardest too, I think.
I think these are the worst. I've seen, whatchamacallit, 5 a billion times, but, and I don't know why. We'll get into that next week. Chris, and I did forget that you saw, A Simple Favor in theaters.
I did. Just real quick. It is a, I think Gone Girl, but with some humor to it.
Okay.
Anna Kendrick brings a very kind of upbeat performance to everything. And Blake Lively is pretty good as well. It is a dark story with some very funny dialogue throughout. Anna Kendrick plays like this mommy blogger. Who's best friend goes missing, and she like then kind of becomes amateur detective to kind of figure out what happens to her, what happened to her, and where it goes is it has some pretty good twists. I think if you've seen Gone Girl, you probably can figure out some of these twists, or if you've read Gone Girl, like it is definitely a Gillian Flynn, is that who wrote those?
Yeah.
It's like Gillian Flynn light, but it is way more like way more humorful. It's very funny. Wife and I had a blast with it. The entire theater actually had a ton of fun with it. I think it's definitely worth watching. I'm going to give it a 4 rating. It's directed by Paul Feig.
He did like Ghostbusters and Bridesmaids and stuff, right?
Yeah, and he's done a bunch of stuff. Yeah, but yes, his last big thing I think was Ghostbusters. But he did Bridesmaids as well. He did The Heat. He did Spy. All of which are pretty good movies. It's a Ghostbuster, you know, that's debatable, but it's not bad.
But knowing all that, I did not expect this to be like a serious, like dark thing, like you're saying. I thought it would just be like, you know, something more like what the hell is a spy movie called?
Spy.
Yeah. Okay. So something more like that.
No, it is more serious in like. Way more serious. It just has a very good comedic touch to it and a fucking absurd ending, which is actually pretty funny. But through most of it, it is actually a pretty serious film that just has a good sense of humor about it. I think it's definitely worth a watch if you like kind of a noir type filmmaking and can stomach it having like some humor to it as well.
Cool, man. Like, I'm gonna have to check that out. I love both people in leads. Like, I love Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. And it has, you know, you're not alone here, Chris. It's got a pretty high score, 84 tomato, 83 audience.
The audience I was with really enjoyed it. So
it's crazy because I'm hearing like no buzz about it. You know, on the Twitterverse, so. It's weird how they decide what's popular or not.
Yep.
But cool, man. I will have to check that out. Awesome. So for next time.
Yep. I don't know if I will have... But I will try to see Mandy, which you have seen.
Yes.
But I don't know if I'll see anything in theaters. This is a light week, it looks like.
I probably will see the new Michael Moore movie. Fahrenheit 11/9, because I don't see enough of that on the news every day.
There's a weird little movie called Assassination Nation that's coming out. I don't know if I'm gonna get it though, or if it's actually gonna be any good. So
you do have The House with the Clock in its Walls.
Yeah, we'll probably skip that one.
Did you know? I don't know if you saw me say this, but like that's directed by Eli Roth.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. Like, really weird.
Yeah, it makes me almost feel like, it's got 61%. But I'm probably going to go see Fahrenheit 11/9, even though, mainly because, like, most Michael Moore movies don't really get a theatrical release like that anymore. Like, I can't remember the last one I saw in the theater, so it's probably Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah.
So a while ago. So I'll probably have that, but I will, of course, have Halloween 5 and 6. So get excited, guys. It's going to be a real fun one next week. And with that, we're out.
Movie dudes.